अन्विक्षेता विशुद्धात्मा देहिनां विषयात्मनां गुणेषु तत्त्वधाध्यानेन सर्वारम्भाविपर्ययम्। अनुच्छेद
160
विशुद्ध
प्यूरिफाइड
आत्मा
सोल
देहिनां
देहिनां
ऑफ द एम्बॉडीड बीइंग्स
ऑफ एम्बॉडीड बीइंग्स
विषय आत्मना ऑफ दोस हु आर डेडिकेटेड टू सेंस ग्रेटिफिकेशन गुणेषु इन द मेटीरियल ऑब्जेक्ट्स ऑफ प्लेजर तत्व एंड ट्रूथ ध्यानेन बाय कंसीविंग सर्वा ऑफ ऑल आरंभ एंड एवर विपर्ययम् द इनेविटेबल फेलियर। A purified soul should see that because the conditioned souls who are dedicated to sense gratification have partly accepted the object of sense pleasure as true, all their endeavors are doomed to failure. A purified soul should see that because the conditioned souls who are dedicated to sense gratification have partly accepted the object of sense pleasure as true, all of their endeavors are doomed to failure. Supported by 7th of Shri Vedanta Sivananda Swami Maharaj Srila Prabhupada. In this verse, the Lord describes the process of becoming desireless. All material sense objects, including those perceived by the form, taste, flavor, touch or sound, are temporary. We now see our family and nation, but ultimately they will disappear. Even our own body, by which we perceive them, will disappear. Thus, the inevitable result of material enjoyment is vipajaya, or great suffering. The word visuddhatma indicates those who have purified themselves by executing the regulative duties of devotional service. They can clearly see the hopeless frustration of material life, and thus they become akamatma, or great soul free from material desire. Om jnanatim rambhatya nanajana sarathya chakshur militam yena tasmai shri gurave namaha shri chaitanya namabhishtam sthapitam yena gurave svayam rupa charanyam dadati वन्देहम् श्रीगुरो श्रीयुतापदकमलम् श्रीगुरु वैष्णवाश्च श्रीरूपम् सागरजातम् सहगणासमानितम् साद्वैतम् सारभूतम् परिजनाशयनम् कृष्णचैतन्यदेवम् श्रीराधाकृष्णपदाम् हे कृष्णा करुणा सिंधो दीनबन्धो गोपेशा गोपिका कान्त राधा कान्तमोऽस्तु ते सप्तकाञ्चन गोरङ्गी राधे वृन्दावनेश्वरी वृषभानुमोऽस्तु ते प्रणमामि वंशकलपतरुभ्यश्च कृपासिन्धुभ्यैव च पतितानां पावनेभ्यो वैष्णवेभ्यो जय श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभो नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत श्रीवासादि गौर हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम हरे राम 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 हरे हरे। So this verse is very interesting. The sole reason being, the whole material world is running solely on based on the principle given in this verse. For instance, we accept the sense pleasure as the absolute truth. So the whole world, if you look, the whole world is accepting that the sense pleasure is the ultimate truth. Whatever we do, it is true, it is good, provided it can gratify our senses. As it is given, we can see nice things, taste nice things, eat nice food stuff, see good things, hear good things. So everything, whatever endeavor people are putting forth, they are all based on gratifying the senses. So whatever is good for the senses, that is good for me. And whichever is not good for the senses, that is not good for me. So everything is based upon the gratification of the senses. So living beings, if you see everyone practically, day after day, you know, year after year, even decades after decades, even lifetime after lifetime, they are just searching for sense pleasure. So the whole material creation and the whole material existence, everywhere, down from, you know, a small insect up to great human beings and beyond that, all the devatas, they are also working on the same principle, that is how to gratify the senses. And that is considered the absolute truth. So one fulfills one's senses with great respect, great demand. And whatever demand it is putting forth, we are ready to satisfy. So this is the main problem of this civilization. And religion or service to God becomes secondary or completely unimportant. It's like many countries, you know, many people, they openly declare, they are faithless, you know, we don't believe in God. And we don't have any religion. Because religion means it causes pain, because religion has got restrictions. And that can restrict our sense gratification. That can check gratification of our senses in so many different ways. So what is the whole point having religion when we can unrestrictedly gratify our senses? In UK, for instance, they say, the people in general, they say, we don't have any religion, but our religion is soccer. The whole life is, you know, turning around soccer. You know, you can see, they go to, you know, if you go to any person who is addicted to a particular game, you can go to their house, you can see everywhere, you know, their stuff, the photographs of their stuff, you know, inside the room, inside the living room, inside the bedroom, everywhere. So they are actually the demigods, you know, they are worshipable lords. They don't know how to perform arati, otherwise they would have done arati also. Actually, it has happened in India, in South India, in Tamil Nadu. One of the movie stars, I think it's a lady, she was worshipped, you know, there was a temple constructed for her, and they started doing the real arati. So it is possible, when one is bewildered by the demands of the senses, then anything is possible. And they are so much attached. It's like, you know, even they can fight. You know, if our team is winning, then we are very happy. You know, the identification, when we identify with a particular team, for instance, so their winning and losing, that becomes our winning and losing. So a particular team, if they are winning, it is our victory. We become jubilous, we become happy. Betting, you know, all these things. It is based on, okay, just identifying with a particular team and then just doing everything based upon them. So if you think about it, it's quite foolish. But at the same time, the whole world is running around this basic principle. India is cricket, here is footy, you know, every nation they have, if you go to different part of the world, there is, you know, something to which they have to attach to be addicted to. One day I went to CrossFit, and it's a few years back, I was not in a devotional club, and there was one match between India and Australia, and India won, not won, lost miserably. So one old man, really old man, and he asked me, did you follow what happened yesterday? I said, I didn't. So he asked me, didn't you follow cricket yesterday? You know, this is the most pathetic situation India ever happened. So didn't you follow? I said, no. He asked me, do you follow cricket? I said, no. He became shocked and he got offended literally. And he was just, you know, staring at me, you know, what? You don't follow cricket? And I was thinking, you know, if he's such an old man and now at least at this point of time, one has to fix one's consciousness on Krishna, on devotional service, but he is completely engrossed and he was completely morose. India lost the game. So this is how we identify completely with something which is external, which has nothing to do with us. You know, those who had so much of attraction for cricket or, you know, for any other game, we can see that time we were so attached, we considered it so important, but now if you look back, it's just useless. It's just, you know, it doesn't make any sense. Whoever win, whoever lose, you know, it's alright, you know. What's the big deal? In Australia, of course, especially in Victoria, it is footy. Many times I have seen, if I am standing on the, in a Golden Street top, many people come and ask, how do you go to Telstra Dome? They said, we are no country, we don't know, you know, where is the Telstra Dome, you know, how do you get there? So many times. People are coming, you know, there for their holy pilgrimage. Going, visiting, you know, a big stadium, you know, so many people, you know, thousands and thousands of people. And the ticket fares are so high. You know, the highest is, I think, is a corporate box. I think it's around 5,000 bucks. So expensive. And the minimum may be, you know, 100, 200 like that for a game. So much of endeavor, so much of money they are spending to identify something completely external. And whatever happens in that arena, it has nothing to do with us. It's just simply a waste of time. Still, it is out of addiction, out of thinking that that can give us happiness. And of course, it can give some kind of sensation. So people keep going and wasting time. Now, this kind of attachment, you know, movie stars, for instance, people even when they watch a particular movie, when they like a particular actor or actress, you know, they start to imitate them, you know, the same similar kind of hairstyle, you know, dressing in the same way, talking in the same way. This is due to excessive attachment. Now, this is exactly opposite to, if you see, reading 10th canto, you know, Gopi, to the act of Gopi, if you see, they have got excessive attachment for Krishna. So when Krishna went away, they were actually acting, imitating like Krishna. One was playing upon the flute just like Krishna. One was, you know, calling out in a sweet voice just like Krishna. One was acting just like, you know, Krishna Balaram killing different demons. So this is the imitation, it is there. Even in the pure sense, the imitation is there when there is excessive attachment. So even for pure devotees, there is imitation. It is said, one of the characteristics of pure devotees who are on the Mahabhagavat platform, who is completely purified, is that they actually imitate the pastimes of the Supreme Lord. It's like, you know, we can see the example of Nityananda Prabhu. Nityananda Prabhu, when he appeared in his childhood, he was famous for enacting different pastimes of Mahabharata, of Ramayana, etc. That is due to the excessive attachment. So in the perverted case, we can see how this excessive attachment is going to be cheap imitation of, you know, something frivolous, which is useless, which is not going to give anything other than waste of time. I had this experience, you know, in India. That is, people go for movies, especially, you know, ladies. And in the sense, they want all this kind of, you know, sentimental movies. Which is the end of the movie. I have gone with my mother, you know, so many times. So after the movie, I see, you know, all of them crying. I was thinking, you know, why people are, you know, paying so much of money, spending so much of time, and at the end of the day, they are crying. You know, pay money and then cry. this is just, you know, just waste, you know, just attachment, you know. And some people, okay, the other side is, you know, go, you know, get excited, you know, bit humorous movies like that. So in all these cases, something which is external to us, we are trying to identify ourselves and gain pleasure or have pleasure or pain just by seeing that it is our pain or pressure. So this is the downside, or this is the negative thing going around in this world. And we think that it can, you know, it can actually go on forever, this kind of happiness. People think the material sense gratification can go on forever. But not necessary. It's a very nice comparison between the rasa in the spiritual world and the material world. As you know, in necro-devotional study, you know, there are five, you know, primary rasas are there, and there are secondary rasas, like, you know, parental affection, conjugal relationship, sakyam, that is a friendship. These are primary rasas. Whereas secondary rasas are, you know, humor, ghastliness, fear. These are secondary rasas. So, in the spiritual world, all the relationship of the Lord's devotees and the Supreme Lord, it is primarily in primary rasas. And secondary rasas are only, it is just adds the flavor. But it is said, in the material world, it gets exactly opposite. That is the secondary rasa, it's mundane, there is spiritual, but it's mundane. Still, the rasa, the principle becomes exactly opposite. That is, secondary rasa becomes primary, and the primary rasa becomes secondary. It is like, if there is a movie, if it is full of, you know, full of parent and relationship, parent and affection, is sure that it is going to be a flop. No one would ever want to watch such a movie. It's like in my native language, they had a movie, they dared to take a movie. Its name was Vatsalyam. Vatsalyam, you know, Vatsalyam means parental affection. But it's mundane. It's a movie, it's completely mundane. And sure to be, you are a complete flop. You are primarily talking about the parental affection and the whole sentiments in that direction. But it was complete flop. Even parents, they don't want to go and watch this movie. Because no one can enjoy it. And if you think about Dakyam, can you imagine a movie which is primarily based on Dakyam? Cannot. Because people cannot conceive. Even if it is, you know, even if it is love affairs, how much, you know, how many songs? You know, how many songs are possible in a movie? Only a few. People cannot fix themselves in any of these primary activities. It's not possible. That is not the nature of the conditioned soul. But at the same time, if you think, you know, if it is humor, it has a lot of potency. You know, there are even humor serials. Humor can go on forever. Because it is secondary, that is primary. That's what we enjoy. Humor we can enjoy. And if it is ghastly, even more. You know, terror movies or, you know, the detective movies, you know, all these kind of movies, it is very big success. Because people can enjoy the secondary principle of enjoyment, the secondary rasa. However, in spiritual world, Krishna also enjoys. He also has laughter, as it said, you know, Krishna is very nice verse, I believe, it says, Hasayan Dharma Krishna. He actually sits along with his friends, and he's just laughing. Why? By cracking jokes. So it is part of the spiritual world. It is part of the spiritual world, of course. It is said, Krishna was sitting in the center, and all is like this, exactly like this, a lot of power. Krishna in the center of the lotus, and all the unlimited gopas, they are sitting around the lotus. And they were just joking, just laughing. So it is there. However, their primary relationship, it is not based on hasyam. It is not primarily based on humor. But that is sakyam, that is friendship. But as part of that, humor is coming. That's all. Now if you consider, it's very interesting point that when we consider that this sense pleasure, it will go on forever, we are actually putting a wrong faith. It cannot go wrong forever. One point mentioned in the Bhagavad is that even if somebody is enjoying this world, even if somebody is gratifying the senses, still, ultimately, when the body goes, all the pleasure is gone. We cannot carry anything. Any of the pleasure made in the material realm cannot be carried forward. It's not possible at all. And we can even see, at this point, if we see, people are actually addicted to one thing. That is technology. The whole world. To everyone, even, you know, to some degree we can see we have need or we have addiction, we have attachment for gadgets. In one way or other. But if you see previous civilizations, say Vedic civilization, if you look, there was Vedic mathematics, there was Vedic astronomy, Vedic astrology is still there. And even Vaimanika Shastra. Vaimanika Shastra is a science dealing with the air aviation. So if we consider at one point of time, even in the Vedic civilization, it was thousands of years back, the whole
material comfort and the material advancement were present. But now if you look, that is no more. Now we cannot, even if we get a copy of Vaimonika Shastra, if you read, we won't understand anything. Because it's too technical for us to understand. So, if we consider even a previous civilization which had everything, in due course of time everything is nullified. It is insignificant. Nobody is bothered about any of the previous civilization other than the history books. It's nothing. It doesn't make any sense to us. However, we think that whatever is going on at this point of time, that will go on forever. The current civilization, the current technology, the current science, everything, the current social structure, we think everything will go on forever. But from the history we can see actually it is not the case. It has its end. It is, you know, it is doomed to failure as this verse is mentioning. It's like, you know, previously there was, you know, different revolutions, you know, green revolution, you might have heard, green revolution, industrial revolution, now it is information revolution. But it's just information, it's not really information, it's mostly junk. And Bhagavatam is also talking about a revolution. Each canto of Bhagavatam is actually talking about a revolution. As it is said, this verse is mentioned in all cantos of Bhagavatam, in, I think it's the preface. That is, Tattva Vibhavo Visargo Janataka Viplavo. That is, the Bhagavatam is actually talking about Janataka Viplava. Viplava means revolution. But this revolution is of consciousness. This revolution is of a sinful act of the people in general. So Bhagavatam has the potency to change, revolutionize everyone's life from sinful activity to pure devotional service. So that is the revolution that actually we are putting forth by Bhagavad Dharma. That is, one can actually revolutionize one's consciousness from sense gratification to gratification of Krishna senses. Otherwise, this society, it is completely bewildered by technology. We cannot imagine this society without mobile phone, without television. Can't, if you say, if you go to public, you know, ask anyone, you know, can you imagine your life without a mobile phone? What people say? No, you know, it is inconceivable. Without a television, inconceivable. Without a laptop? No, because people are so attached, so addicted to this kind of facilities. Even the devotees we use in Krishna service, but we can also get attached to these things. Ultimately we shouldn't. And if this technology, this has deficiency in its own. We can see what's happening to the planet. So much of a problem. Everybody is talking about global warming. So much of havoc going around. And one of my colleagues actually, when I was doing research, one of my colleagues went to Lund University in Sweden to do particular research on the impact of the radio wireless network on the human brain. So they were not directly taking the human because, you know, you cannot expose the whole radiation onto human beings, you know, high radiations and, you know, do experiments. So they were taking rats. So they exposed this high radiation to the brain of rats, you know, to the head part. And after that, they dissect, you know, dissect the brain and take out and have a look at the neuron, what happened to the neuron. So the final conclusion they had was the neuron death. This radiation actually causes neuron death, means loss of memory and loss of many other things. So this is, you know, we are so addicted to this, you know, our mobile phones. Even I am using a lot. Still, it has a side effect. And so much of side effect. It's like when cigarette was introduced, you know, when people started smoking, that time it was considered cigarette, you know, cigarette smoking is cool, there is no problem, no health issues. One time we remember, you know, there was some Maharaj was actually showing us one video, you know, it was showing the 40 years back advertisement.
Cigarette promotion, doctor cigarette.
Yes, doctor, which brand you smoke, doctor, something like that, wasn't it? Asking the doctor, the advertisement is like this, you know, interviewing the doctor and asking, which is your brand, which is your favorite brand of cigarette that you smoke? And he's, you know, he's taking a brand and he's saying, okay, this is my favorite brand. And one nurse is there, you know, the whole team. So this was like that when cigarette was introduced many years ago. So people didn't have a proper understanding of the side effects. But now everyone is well aware, still people are smoking. Similarly, even the technology what we are going through, we are addicted to, it has its impact, it has its after effect. Though we are not really realizing it now. And we can see the whole economic development, the whole technology, everything is driven by the mode of passion. So from Bhagavad Gita we can understand, whatever is driven by the mode of passion, it has to come to a painful end. It has to come to a painful end. We cannot say that, okay, only in this case, there won't be any painful end. No, that has to be there. So this verse actually helps us to understand the fallacy of material world. Because this verse actually picks what are the defects, what is the exact defect of the material creation, of the material energy. So a purified soul, as it is said here, Vishuddhatma, a purified soul, he can exactly see what are the defects of the material creation, what are the defects of the material energy. If not that a pure devotee can, you know, just always think about the past tense of Krishna and that's about it, he does not know anything about the material world. He knows, he has a full understanding of about the material creation. As Ishopanishad says, one has to understand the knowledge and nation side by side. Then one can understand everything. So a pure devotee's perspective, he can exactly see what is the fault in the material world. A very, very interesting example is Srila Prabhupada. Prabhupada, he was expert in picking the fault in the material creation. He was expert in picking fault in whatever material dealings are going on. So any interviews of Prabhupada with all great leaders, you know, social, political or religious leaders, Prabhupada used to pick the fault, exactly, just like this. You know, I was watching the famous video, an interview with a cardinal in France. Everyone must have watched that video. In that, you know, the cardinal is, you know, he's arguing for, you know, animal killing, he's arguing for beef eating, you know, arguing for all this, you know, cow slaughter. And he's giving so many arguments. He's telling, you know, our children are suffering, you know, our father in the whole, so many hungry people around the world, what's wrong in killing a few cows, you know, just for killing, just to feed them. He was putting for so many arguments. So Prabhupada actually picked just one point. He mentioned, there are, you know, seven kinds of mother. We are drinking milk from a cow, so cow is our mother. How can you kill your mother? So he was able to see the fault in everywhere. In one conversation, I think in San Francisco, I'm not sure, in a garden conversation, Prabhupada was sitting and all these great professors, theologians and professors from different universities, they are having a chat with Prabhupada. Prabhupada just mentioned one simple point. You are all speculating, you are all doing so much research, you are all trying to find who is God, what is God, but I am saying we are giving God. Here is Krishna. Krishna is God. We are giving Krishna. Why don't you take it? So Prabhupada was able to see what really going around and he was giving the direct solution. Understanding the defect. So it is very important for us as devotees, aspiring devotees, to understand the fault in the material creation. To understand fault in material dealings. So we have to be fault finding. Fault not in the devotees. That we may be very expert. But we had to find fault in the material creation and the material energy. One very good example that I like very much is when Srila Prabhupada was met with Ambarish Prabhu, the Ford. He asked, so usually some guru meets such a wealthy person, an industrialist, you know, owner of, you know, many, many companies. If somebody comes in front of you, they try to flatter. Usually there is a tendency to flatter so that we can gain something. That is, we have that tendency. If we find someone who is very wealthy or who has a lot of influence, there is a tendency to flatter them so that we can get their favor. So Prabhupada, he was a purified soul. He asked one question. The devotees mentioned he is the son of, you know, great Alfred Ford. So Prabhupada asked, where is he gone now? And do you also want the same kind of destination where no one knows where has he gone? So this is the question Prabhupada asked. It shows exactly that what is wrong with the process.
what is wrong with this material endeavor. That is actually shaking. Somebody who actually in one interview he mentioned that question actually changed my life. Because he could understand there is one genuine person who is actually trying to find the exact cause in the material existence and who is trying to help. So this is the nature of the devotee. My spiritual master, for instance, he actually personally he mentioned to me once, you had to develop knowledge and you had to be expert, or you had to expert in such a way that you can understand what is the fault in Maya, how Maya works. One should try to understand how Maya works. Then actually one can get out of it. So it's a very, very, very important point for all the devotees to think about, to meditate on the fault of the material creation. When Srila Prabhupada went to MIT, that is the, you know, one of the most prestigious institutions in America for technology, Massachusetts Institute of Technology. When he went there, when he was giving a talk, he was about to give a talk, a few Indian students were there. And they were very proud because it is in 70s, and that time there are not too many Indian students and going and studying there. But there were a few, and they were very proud of their prowess, about their technology, about their understanding. And they challenged Prabhupada. They asked Prabhupada, actually India needs technology. We need technological development. Not this kind of Bhagavad Gita, not kind of Vedas. It is for old generation, it is useless. So why are you coming here with old stuff, and why are you presenting this here? So Prabhupada actually pointed out their mistake. Prabhupada asked one question again. Prabhupada said, you came here to beg, but I came here to give. So you basically keep quiet. So that is a fact, they came to beg for what is there in the land. Whereas Prabhupada said, no, I came to give, because I have something to give. You don't have anything to give, so came here to beg. So this is, you know, Prabhupada, we can see how he was exactly pointing out the mistake. Because this is how the material energy is working. And Prabhupada is just, it's like my spiritual master, he was mentioning, he gave a talk in Bach, that is Baba Atomic Research Center. It is a, you know, very, very prestigious institution in India because it is an atomic research center. And all the employees, pretty much everyone is a scientist. So he was giving a talk and he was explaining Bhagavad Gita, the principles in Bhagavad Gita. And he was mentioning how the whole scientific community is susceptible to mistake. So he asked, at this point, global warming is one of the biggest issues. Everyone talks about global warming, even the politicians, even the sports star, even a local man, everyone speaks about it. So many of the oil companies, they have actually declared big amounts of money they are ready to give to those scientists who write articles which is quite favorable for their plan. That is, you know, don't criticize global warming. Say, you know, it can be there, it may not be there, we don't know. Present in a way that, you know, it is not directly affecting their plan. So instead, you know, they are ready to pay around, I think, 25 grand or something like that for one article in a classified journal. So he was asking the scientists, okay, how about you? What do you think? If such an offer was offered to you, what would be your reaction? So he was mentioning, the scientists actually, they started looking at the floor like this. You are actually showing, you know, they start looking at the floor. And he asked, okay, maybe you are morally alright, you will be fine, you won't take such a money and you may do your research. But think about your family. What will your wife say if they say, you know, such a big amount is coming, what will they say? So he was mentioning, the scientists even, they started looking at the ground, further ground, you know, like that. no answer, no reply whatsoever. So this is, you know, so they cannot actually, they cannot be moral. Morality can work to some degree, but when money comes, everything changes. So this is the problem. This is the exact problem of this world. That is exactly opposite than what it should be. And if we have to understand the fault of the material energy, first of all we have to know Shastra. Without knowing Shastra, it's very difficult. We will get bewildered. We will be completely taken away by the material energy. So we have to know Shastra and we have to apply that Shastra in our practical life. Then we can see working of Maya. Otherwise, it is not possible. And in this verse we can see very interesting, that is, this verse was actually spoken by Krishna for one purpose, to make everyone akamatma. Akamatma means desireless. So in the first verse, Krishna is saying, the Supreme Personality of God has said, taking full shelter in me, with the mind carefully fixed in devotional service of the Lord, as spoken by me, one should live without personal desire and practice the social and occupational system called Varnashram. So in this verse, Krishna is explaining how to become desireless. So for that this technique is presented, that is finding fault in the material energy. Bhagavad Gita we can see the same thing. That is, ehi samsparshaja bhoga dukha yone eshate adhyantavanta kaunteya na teshu kremate buddha. So that is actually the sign of an intelligent person. That is, he does not try to enjoy the senses. Samsprasha, ja. Ja is the senses and bhogeshu. Bhoga is the sense object. So that the sensation that is obtained by touch of senses with the sense object, that has a problem. It can be anything. The problem is that adhya antavanta. Such a happiness has got adhya, that's the beginning. Anta, that's an end. It is temporary in nature. So one cannot actually enjoy forever. So that is why Buddha, one who is intelligent, does not try to enjoy senses. This is the same reason. So this is exactly the same point is mentioned here. That is, they understand the fallacy of the material nature, how it works. So since they want to, an intelligent person want to be desireless, they can see the fault and then can resist in enjoying that. It is said, when such a person, when an intelligent person, a devotee, when he sees this the fault in the material nature again and again, he actually becomes convinced that it is not for my enjoyment. It has some fault and I should try to enjoy this. So this is the understanding one should gain from this verse. And also we can see it is not independent, because Krishna has already spoken in the previous verse about devotional service, about thinking of Krishna. So just without Krishna consciousness, without devotion, one cannot come to a platform of desirelessness. It's not possible. As it is said, bhakti parekari bhava. That is, bhakti is the prime thing. And due to bhakti, the secondary thing what happens is detachment. Or the desirelessness means no material desire. So that is only the secondary effect. The primary effect is bhakti. So by devotional service and with that devotional service, when we analyze and when we study and when we understand the material nature, then we can actually become akamatma. But otherwise it's not possible. You know, we cannot think that, you know, we can see just fault in the material nature and we don't bother about the devotional service. We don't do the positive activity. That's not possible. So it has to go hand in hand. And then one can actually become desireless or free from material desire and fixed in Krishna consciousness. So I stop here to see any questions or comments.
One comment.
Yes, sir.
As mentioned in Bhagavad Gita, that whatever is tasty in the beginning is poison in the end.
Yeah.
So I just wanted to say
that. That's right. That's the nature of mortal passion. Essentially, it's very, very nectarian, but at the end, it is not. It's bitter at the end. Yes,
sir.
Yeah, there are many articles actually.
Published.
Yes. No one is bothered though. Okay, thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Prasad Bhagavan.